Welcome into Locked On Knicks. Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw here, joined by special guest Schwinny Poo, who you might know from Posting and Toasting or the Posting and Toasting Show, or on Twitter at Schwinny Poo. We are going to break down the top five moments of the Knicks season in a Locked On wide initiative to break down the top moments for our teams during this 2019-20 season.
Yeah, we start off with a monumental return to the Garden as the calendar turned to 2020, and then two big games for the Knicks' young guns. There's a little bit of debate over which one should have been three and which one should have been four, so we get into that on this episode of Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knicks is on a rebound, back up, off the glass. Good.
RJ
brings the Knicks to the
what he does is contagious.
Oh, Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane. Knox foul from behind. Count it and one to Trier. Trier drives.
All right, welcome to Locked On Knicks. Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw. Like I said, we have our special guest, Schwinny Poo, today on. What's up, Schwinny? How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you? How are things?
Good. Yeah, it's been a little while since we talked in podcast form. How's your isolation going? Are you still at your parents' house, living in the basement?
Yep. Yeah, no, literally in the basement, though. So, pretty good. I'm eating better, so probably lost a little bit of weight.
Wow. That's surprising, considering when we were doing our Twitch streams for PNT, it seemed like every time that we went to start, you were getting a pizza.
I mean, that was just because it would be every Friday, so Friday is pizza day.
That does make sense. Is there a good pizza place right by your parents? They're like upstate, right?
Yeah. There's a bunch of good pizza places around here. I mean, it's like a lot of fucking Italian people, I guess, so covered. Got the bases covered there. All the key elements of a healthy, nutritious, and complete diet.
Nice. Very nice. All right. Well, let's just get right into it. We had a little bit of debate before the show about how we were going to rank these, but I think we pretty easily came to a consensus on what our top five moments would be. They were all based around games, obviously. I mean, there wasn't really – I wouldn't say that, say, the Leon Rose hiring or anything along those lines, I would consider to be a top moment of the season. It was just kind of a thing that happened during the season. Most of these are all games, and it's all relating to when players that we love did really well. So the first game, and this is the one that we sort of consensus came to as the fifth best of the season, was the New Year's Day game against the Portland Trail Blazers. Carmelo Anthony coming back to the Garden. He actually had a really, really good game. So for those that were looking forward to seeing Carmelo play again, it was a good day. He had 26 points on 11 of 17 shooting.
Your hero.
My hero. My absolute hero, Carmelo. Yes. Greatest Knick of all time. No, I'm kidding. Please don't. If people aren't in on the joke, no, I don't think he's the best Knick of all time. But I do joke about it because I don't hate him as much as most, which means that I obviously think he's the best player of all time. But most notably for the Knicks, you had Mitchell Robinson came in, scored 22 points on 11 of 11 shooting, which tied a Knicks record for most field goals attempted without a miss in a game. He also tacked 8 rebounds onto that. You also had Marcus Morris had a pretty good game prior to being traded, had 18 points. Frank Ntilikina came in and had 9 points and 10 assists off the bench in 23 minutes and helped close the game. The only one that you could maybe say, like, this kind of sucked was RJ Barrett had kind of a cruddy game. Only had 7 points on 3-12 shooting, but all in all, at least to me, the Mitch performance and the Frank performance made this one totally worth it. You had tons of big dunks from Mitch. There was a statement dunk from Frank down towards the end of the game where he sort of just breezed by a lazy defender on the outside and went in for a sort of a transition dunk that was awesome and very un-Frank-like, and he got super hyped about it because it was kind of like a kind of an early dagger that sort of buried the Trailblazers and stopped, you know, them from having an opportunity to come back. And yeah, I mean, Schwinn, what were your memories of this game?
I think my favorite memory of the game was watching the Knicks beat Carmelo Anthony. That was really nice. Seeing Carmelo come apart in the second half was really good. I remember Carmelo being terrible defensively at the five. That was really nice to see. Trying to think if there's... Oh, yeah, he missed a bunch of contested mid-range jumpers later in the game when he got tired because he wore himself out because he took too many mid-range jumpers. So, you know, all of that was really nice to see. Those were some of the high points, I thought. So I liked that. I don't even hate Carmelo Anthony that much. I don't know why. I just felt like doing that. Yeah, I mean, it was a fun game. I thought, like, they just had a stretch in the fourth quarter where, like, they looked like a modern NBA team, and everybody was, like, outside the arc, and they were running a bunch of spread pick and roll, and they knocked down a bunch of threes, and, like, you know, they had, like, a Knox, Portis, and Bullock 2-3, 2-4 unit, and they were all just, like, spreading it out, and Mitch was dunking everything, and him and Frank had a nice little two-man game going on. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it's like, it's not really like a lot of high points for us in this season, but like, that was definitely one where you can kind of see, you know, two of your younger players kind of really dominating the game for a stretch together. And then Frank also just like locked up Damian Lillard for a long stretch of that game. He blocked him on a three, actually. And I think Dame actually didn't even make a shot until like the second half. Really weird game for him. Because he's been kind of a Knick killer, or at least performed well at the Garden for most of his career. So yeah, I mean, it was a fun game, and you know, I sucked that RJ and Knox didn't really get into the act, but you know, that's kind of the way it goes sometimes. But it was fun. It was a fun, like, big, easy victory. They won by like what, 23 or something like that at the end. So, mm-hmm. You know, it was, how many fucking blowouts did we even have this year? Like, you know, well, that we actually blew the other team out. We've had a lot of blowouts.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of blowouts, but not in our
not game. Many on the Knicks side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, and it was like, you know, I know Portland hasn't had the best year, but they're definitely better than the Knicks. So, you know, and they were healthy. Like, it was like a full Portland team, you know. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like Dame was out or CJ was out or anything like that. It was the whole team. And, yeah, I mean, Mitch just fucking ate. He just ate Hassan Whiteside's lunch as soon as he checked in the game. It's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was going to say that was one of my highlights watching the highlights of this game, for lack of a better term, was just like how big Mitch looked next to Hassan Whiteside, who's a huge dude at the end of the day. And Mitch with his arms up, he just kind of babied him a little bit. And there were a few different times where Mitch just was absolutely physically dominant in this one. He had a crazy lob dunk on what was an awful pass from Randall. Like, Randall recognized it a second too late, then threw the ball way too high. But that showed off the full extent of Mitch's athletic ability. And that'll be sort of the one reason I'm kind of thankful, maybe in 20, 30 years when we look back on Mitch's career, that he had such crummy teammates through his first two seasons, is that it allowed him to have just a higher degree of difficulty on his dunks that he never would have achieved with competent ball handlers. So that was a big plus for me. There were a couple of Frank and Mitch pick and rolls, which I've long argued should be more of a staple in the Knicks offense, but instead, just because of how infrequently in the grand scheme of things those two play together, they're just sort of like little morsels you can find from game to game. But both of the ones I saw ended up in big time dunks for Mitch. Frank, as I've noted, is just a great passer in those situations because of his ability to see over his defender and sort of hit Mitch in kind of the opportune pocket for him to just turn and flush without having to bring the ball down. And then just some of the Melo stuff was fun from a nostalgia perspective. I don't know about you guys, but I never, ever thought we would see Melo even play again in MSG. And if he did, like, I thought it would be in like some small off the bench cameo, so like the crowd could applaud him or boo him to their heart's content. I did not think he would ever drop 26 points again at the Garden. So that was cool. He had one really nice double pump finish over Mitch. So there was a level of athleticism I thought he had lost quite a long time ago. And then on the other side of things, Mitch had a really nice, like, double tap off the backboard where he was, again, just sort of like bullying Melo, and he could just score whenever he wanted. Finally put it in on the third try. So they were just, this was just a game full of solid moments, if relatively unspectacular, I think, compared to our top four.
Yeah, and yeah. It was pretty nice for, like, Melo to get. I know when he came back with OKC, it was weird, like the reception was weird. I don't think people really wanted to boo him, but they didn't want to cheer for him because it was like, we were on like a pretty good stretch then, so the game actually mattered because it was like earlier in the season. So he was kind of getting booed when he like touched it. I don't know. It was a weird like comeback. And then obviously last year he didn't really play. So like this was, you know, this was his second game back at the Garden since he left. And it was like, you know, it was nice for him to kind of feel the affection of the crowd and all that good shit. Yeah, I mean, I'm happy he's not a Knick anymore, but, you know, apparently that might change this summer, so.
I was going to say, get ready, baby. He's coming back this summer. I'm becoming more convinced by the day that that's going to happen this summer, by the way. Not to veer this into a totally different discussion, but, like, when you read, like, I think Ian Bailey put out, I think it was in one of his mailbag, either videos or one of his written ones recently, where someone asked him, hey, what do you think the likelihood is that Melo comes back? And he put it at something like 80% or something like that. And I was like, oh, God, dude, that is a lot higher than I thought it would be. I thought it would be maybe like 50-50. But he's like, no, I think it's like 80% chance Melo comes back this summer to the Knicks for sort of a goodbye tour. So get ready for that. Maybe this was foreshadowing of things to come, although hopefully it would be, because it was a pretty good performance. But yeah, I had forgotten, like, until I was watching the highlights, I had forgotten too that this was the one, you know, the game where Mitch had maybe his most impressive athletic dunk of the season, the sort of Odell Beckham-esque, like, falling backwards but still managed to grab the ball, like, sort of behind his head while he's like running and still had his momentum carrying him, and then like managed to reach back, cock it back, and then dunk it in on a kind of so-so oop from Julius Randle.
He also had one when like Randle hurled it at his face. Like,
yeah.
It was ridiculous. He gunned it at him. And I don't know. And like Mitch doesn't really have the greatest hands. So like, I just remember like I was like, oh, wow. I mean, he caught it and then he dunked it, but I was just like, that was a terrible pass. And you chucked it at him like, fucking prime Roger Clemens or something was throwing something, like he was Mike Piazza and that was Clemens, like, relax, buddy.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. It was a bit much. I mean, Julius Randle has a rep as a good passer, but, you know, as we saw this year, it's not always the case. He, definitely has his moments where he throws ones that make you shake your head a little bit. I think we could probably safely move on to our next game. Cause we've got nostalgic about this one enough.
Hey guys, if you're anything like me, one of your main concerns during this pandemic is that your favorite restaurants are still going to be there when this is over. This is a major, major, major issue for the restaurant industry, like it is for all aspects of society. And one of the best things you can do to support your local restaurants is order their food. And if you're going to do that, why not do it on Postmates? You know, I love food. That's why I love using Postmates, because they deliver it from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. And the great thing is it's not just burgers and sushi. They actually make my life easier with grocery delivery and whatever I can think of delivery to. Convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. I don't even have to worry about going outside and grabbing food myself and putting my health and my family's health at risk. So you should download Postmates right now on iOS or Android. You can find your favorites and get anything you want delivered within the hour. And here's the key thing, guys. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNBA. That's code LOCKEDONNBA for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it.
This one was pretty, this next one was pretty near and dear to me because I actually got to see this one in person, but like not in a professional way. I got to just go as a fan and enjoy it. And it was the Heat at the Knicks. This one was January 12th. So not too long after that New Year's game. And in this one, the visiting Heat, who are much better than the Blazers, came into MSG. Well, and I guess we sort of had a debate about this one versus the other one. So I'll say this one, then I'll introduce the other one, then we can debate about which one is the best game. But so this one, either three or four, third or fourth best moment of the year, was the debut of Headband RJ, where RJ came out wearing a headband for the first time ever, which was unexpected. And then he turned it up and did really freaking good. He scored 23 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, played almost 40 minutes. I think he wound up scoring more points than that in at least a couple games this season. But I would say probably his best overall game of the season, because he also sunk 8 of 10 free throws, which was always an issue for him this year. Just looked really comfortable. Looked like this sort of player that we all hope that he can become as far as being able to take over a game and, you know, close out a tight game and really put it on himself. And the Knicks came out with a really tight victory in this one. So that's that one. Then the other game that was up for the third or fourth spot, and this is the only one that we couldn't really decide on a definitive spot for, was the Knicks and the Wizards. And the Knicks actually lost this game. This one was on March 10th, so actually the second last game before the shutdown of the NBA. The Knicks lost 122-115 to the Wizards, and it was on the road. But the big takeaway from this one, despite the loss, was Frank Ntilikina coming in. He got his first 20-point game, and on top of it, turned it into a 20-point, 10-assist double-double. Also had a couple steals in the game, only 2 turnovers, and shot 6-9 overall, 3-5 from 3. He was great. RJ was so-so, but Frank just kind of made everybody better. He had a really good, you know, rapport with Mitch in this game and with Bobby Portis, and they sort of led this really good stretch of Knicks basketball where, if I'm not mistaken, they were in the lead at one point late and then sort of gave it up as soon as Frank came out, because that's just sort of how things went at times this season. So that was our other contender for potential fourth or third best. So Schwinn, what are your thoughts on these two and which one should be considered better and why?
I thought the Miami game should be higher, pretty, like, you know, just as a point of fact. The Frank game was fun. They came out so bad, that starting lineup. I think they were down like 13, 14, 15. I don't remember what it was within like the first 3 or 4 minutes of the game. And then it was so bad that like Miller, who was pretty, you know, not super, like, he's not one of these coaches that is always like pulling out lineups all 5 at one time to, you know, when they're like not playing well or whatever, but he did that game. And they got the Knicks back in the game, and I think they like basically took the lead going into the second half. And then the same thing kind of played out in the second half, where the bench or the starters like played like ass, and then the bench played better, but like, you know, they just couldn't really make up the gap, and then it just got worse when the starters came back in to save the day. So that was that was like, it was awesome that Frank had a really nice game, and he had kind of, I thought he had been showing signs in the few games before that too, that he was like playing more aggressively. We had seen a bit more of that in the previous weeks, like the Houston game comes to mind. He had a game right before that against Detroit, where like his numbers weren't great, but he just was a lot more aggressive. And so like for him to have a good game in combination with actually being aggressive and like, you know, not necessarily, it's not so much forcing the issue as much as like, he was not just coming up and like running the offense. He was actually kind of reading what the defense was doing and making them pay for it. And yeah, I mean, it was awesome. But like the Miami game was, but like the Wizards suck and Miami doesn't suck. They're a really good team. Frank didn't play that game. I think Dennis Smith is also out for that game. So I believe it was Elford and Kadeem at point. And yeah, RJ came out like really, really good in that game. And that was one of the most impressive two-way efforts I've seen from a Knicks player in God knows how long. Like perimeter player, at least. It's harder to say with like Mitch, right? Because that's just different. But he was, you know, I thought he did a really good job on Butler. I thought he made, I think it was definitely a point for him to show out against Tyler Hero, who has been, I don't know, just wildly like become overhyped because he's a fucking meme or something. and like, yeah, I just think he was definitely motivated to show out that game, and he did. And it was especially awesome to see him do it against Butler because Butler is kind of like, he's not a super athlete. He is not the greatest outside shooter. He's kind of like stronger and craftier more than he is, you know, bouncy and quick and explosive. And like, you know, RJ is that's kind of like the mold of player you could see him becoming at his best whenever that is, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the line. So it was just nice to see him like really play well against a guy like that, who is ostensibly, you know, their primary ball handler now too. So, you know, it was just really nice to see that. And then I think Kevin Knox had a really good game too, if I remember correctly. I haven't checked the box score, but I think he had like 17 or something like that in that game. He had a nice game.
Yeah, Knox did have 17, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, shot 75% and 50% for 3.
And did Mitch? Yeah. Mitch had a good game too, I believe.
No, Mitch got in real bad foul trouble.
Is that what happened?
Mm. Yeah, he had 5 fouls in just 14 and a half minutes.
Right. Grundle had a good game though.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Randall was pretty good. 10 of 22 shooting, 26 points.
And that was after he came back to the team after his I think was it his grandmother that passed away?
Yes. Yeah, yes. He had come back after that. Taj had a really good game as well. This was one of those where Taj was sort of like, wow, you're playing pretty good for someone who's like 85 years old. Like 31 and a half minutes. He had 14 points, 8 rebounds, a steal and a block, and he shot 5 of 6 from the floor. So another one of those like standout efforts from Taj, where he was a good security blanket for when Mitch got into foul trouble.
Yeah, it was a nice game, and like I think Morris was out that game too. He was injured. So it was just like, I mean, it's like when the Knicks are underhanded, it's not exactly like, you know, they're missing these huge stars or something. So it's not like I'm not trying to like gas it up like that, but it was like they were undermanned. They were out, what, like a starter at the time, Morris, mm-hmm. Frank, who has been their, you know, backup point guard. You know, it just, they were out a few guys, and it was nice for them to get a win against a really, I know the Heat had just lost to, the fucking China Nets, sorry, the Brooklyn Nets. and like, you know, okay, big deal. So they lost to the Knicks too. Blah, blah, blah. But like they were a good team. They were on a nice run before that. They are, you know, have more or less, I think they had kind of solidified themselves as the fourth seed, but I haven't looked at the standings.
So I think at the time of that game, they were rolling as like the second or third seed behind Milwaukee. And they were like neck and neck with Boston at that particular moment for the second seed. So they were cooking, you know, other than the Nets loss right before that. But they were playing really good basketball.
Right. So I think like just for those reasons, it's hard. And like, yeah, like, I mean, the headband thing is cool. Like, it was just a fun game. And it was like, it was one of those fucking random, like, I think it was a Sunday afternoon game at the Garden.
It was. Yeah.
It was like those games are always just like when they're good, they're just something about them is so much more fun than like the average normal 7:30, 8 o'clock tip off.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say, having been there in person, it was an incredibly fun game. And
was it a boisterous atmosphere?
Oh, it was insane. It was like a fucking playoff game. Like, forget about it. Like, people were going insane during that game. You know, before we started talking with this, I was thinking, like, oh, I love the Frank 20 and 10 game so much, but my recency bias must have kicked in because that's bullshit. Like, this was way better. Yeah. This game was absolutely better. So, yeah, this one was so fun.
I'm going to end up watching this again today. I haven't watched it in a while.
Yeah, I've had the highlights playing the whole time that we've been talking, and I'm just like reliving the moments again, and I'm like, man, yeah, this is a fun game.
RJ had a little snarl. He had a little snarl after.
Yeah, RJ had the one that turned into the picture too, where he dunked it and then looked at his hand afterwards, like where he dunked it real hard in transition. A very, very memeable game, very fun game. They're wearing the coolest uniforms, which I will attest until forever that those City Edition uniforms are so sweet.
I don't know why people don't like those, actually.
I don't know how people can't like them. They're freaking amazing. But yeah, Gavin, what were your memories of these two games, and have you swayed at all during this discussion?
Well, no, because I already had the Heat game ahead of it. Then you guys reaffirmed all of my thoughts. So I will we'll take a quick second to shout out Frank's game against the Wizards, because to me it was just a flash of what he could be. I want to say in the future, I think maybe more realistically in a different world where he had a really good jump shot, because I think this just kind of highlighted to me something I've always thought, but maybe never totally talked about on the pod. He really is like a good jump shot away from being a star, not like a mega super like game changing star, but like a star type player. Like, when you take into account just how it opened every other aspect of his game, and the fact that he clearly came back last year quite a bit more explosive, I think if guys actually had to play up on him, he'd get to the rim pretty consistently. And then with his height and sort of natural inclination towards passing, he could just kind of operate as a mini version of some of the better ball movers and operators in the league, like guys like Luka Doncic. And I'm not saying even with a great jump shot, he would never be that effective as a passer, but sort of a poor man's version of that. And I don't think we'll ever get to see it, because I don't think he's ever going to be a good jump shooter. But I think what this did drive home is, even if he's just an average one, I mean, that's sort of the path to him being an elite role player. And going back, I mean, the 10 assists were a little bit inflated because guys were hitting these crazy contested threes, but he just made some really sharp plays. And I think, Alex, the type of plays that make you and I constantly defend him and say we're in love with him. Like, he had this little, like, it felt like something out of the 90s, because you never see teams muck up the paint like this anymore. But he was kind of in the mid post, and Taj came over to set a little screen for him. Both defenders went with Frank, and he just slipped this little, like, no look against the grain pocket pass back to Taj for a dunk, I think a second earlier than the defense anticipated it. And again, it's just one of those IQ plays that, combined with his length, that he's able to make pretty consistently, even in a really tight space. And those are the types of plays that make me love Frank. But I don't think it was even comparable to the RJ Heat game. And I'll just say the Heat game in general, because, I mean, like you guys, I've been watching the highlights throughout this, and I think I just forgot how good of a win that was. They were down by 9 about halfway through the fourth quarter. Reggie Bullock hits a huge three to get it to 106-105. But then Miami didn't – usually when the Knicks win games like this, it's because the other team just has an uncharacteristically bad effort down the stretch, and the Knicks make some fluky shots and pull it off. Like, the Heat kept making corner threes, and they gave the Knicks every excuse to blow this. But Julius Randle, a guy I just beat up a ton, he made his play of the season. He beat three defenders off the dribble with 35 seconds left to make it 122-119. Jimmy Butler gets fouled on a three with 19 seconds left, only makes 2 out of 3 free throws. The Knicks hit their freebies on the other end. Butler misses a layup that could have potentially won it. And if I remember right, sorry if I may interrupt,
I think it was actually Randle hit those clutch free throws as well, wasn't it?
I can't remember if it was him or RJ. It was one of them.
I think it was one of those two. But either way, for either one of them, it was redemption. Like, I just remember whoever hit the free throws, I was like, wow, that's awesome, because that's like total redemption for them, because Randle had missed them all the way back in Miller's first game as the as the coach. He had missed the key free throw against Indy that ultimately cost the Knicks the game. And then RJ at another point had had key free throws late in a game and had missed them. And they both sort of came up in the clutch in this game, which was nice.
Yeah, just to, I found it was RJ, and he actually, I was giving him a little bit too much credit. He only went 1 for 2, but that was enough to give the Knicks a little separation, because Jimmy Butler just drove into a triple team, and Randall kind of incidentally stole the basketball. Like, I don't think he totally saw it coming, but he just kind of swiped down and got a hand on it, which is, I think, kind of the perfect way for Julius Randall to win a basketball game. But yeah, I just wanted to, a final note on that, he came on to circle back, and I just, what I love most about RJ, and I think this is a natural transition, because this is what we saw a lot against the Rockets, and I think the reason maybe we have this Rockets game higher is he was doing it against better defenders, but just his ability when he's locked in and when he's empowered to win one-on-one with physicality, and for a teenager to do that in the NBA, is just stunning. And I wonder, like, if that's something, you know, it's going to get a little bit better, but I wonder how much better it gets, because some of these guys, they just kind of top out from a physical perspective a little bit earlier in life. And I wonder if that's kind of the case with RJ, and it's why guys just bounce off him. And obviously, like, that's always going to be his strength will always be his strength. But I just wonder how high the ceiling is in that capacity. Like, is he ever just going to turn into like, I don't think he quite has the frame to be like a LeBron-esque beast, but like when he's 26, 27, or even 29, will dudes just totally bounce off him? Because in this game, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Harrow, like, he's just pushing them under the basket at points. Yeah.
The Hero stuff was just embarrassing. Like, that entire discussion this year has been embarrassing. So to embarrass Tyler Hero in this game as he did was super satisfying. And I say that as somebody that, like, really liked Tyler Hero before the draft and still think he's, like, going to be a really good player. But, you know, I think this is a tendency people have to, like, overvalue certain skill sets and not really understand what the fuck they're watching and what young players go through and adjusting for team fit. Like, Tyler Hero came in as a good jump shooter, and he's gotten to play in a team that has a true star, borderline top 10 player, a great coach, established system that allows him to play to his strengths. And, like, yeah, and he started off super hot from three, but if you really, like, go track his season, like, he tailed off. As soon as the three-point shooting went down, like, his impact on games went down. And you look at that, and then you compare it to somebody like RJ, who's strengths coming in were very much not three-point shooting, and basically, like, his ability to penetrate and get to the rim and draw contact and all those things. And, like, the Knicks have done absolutely nothing to play to his strengths. I'd bet every penny I have that he hated every second of playing with Julius Randle, but you wouldn't know it from anything he said publicly. He hasn't bitched, he hasn't complained, he hasn't done a lot of things that he might have been able to do, even if it's, yes, I know he's a rookie and have to earn their stripes, but, like, he could say something even underhanded out of turn to the media that could be taken in some way that he hasn't, and he's put up with it, and he's really played through a lot. I mean, there's been a lot of shit that went on this year, you know, like 10 games in the season, the front office is calling out or that they're basically putting Fizz on the chopping block for all intents and purposes. Even before that, like, the pressure on the organization coming into the season because they didn't get any of the stars and the Nets got stars and just everything about that. Like, he's being asked if being a Knick is cool, like, in preseason, you know, what the hell is he supposed to say? He's dealing with that. Then he's dealing with, like, a front office change and all, God knows, all the Fizdale getting fired after 22 games. There's a lot of shit going on. And he's been steady through that, and his season, if you really look at it, break it down, like, he was improving, and after the All-Star break his numbers are better, and if you're just watching him play, like, his impact looks better, and he's being a little bit more judicious about his spots. And this Heat game was definitely one of the kind of, like, you know, when guys are rookies, you're sometimes just looking for the games that give you an idea of what they can be if they achieve a level of consistency. And, you know, this game, and we'll get to, like, you know, the Houston game later. And he's had a few games like this. I don't think the Chicago game was in this top five, but, like, he had that game against Chicago too, which was really nice. Like, those are all, like, within the last month or two of the season, you know, like, those are probably his best games. And against really good teams, and when you start seeing that on a more consistent basis, as you are starting to see it, it says something about the player, and it really gives you an idea of, like, okay, like, this is where this kid could end up. And, you know, I don't think he's going to be one of these number one MVP caliber players, but I do think that he is the type of wing player. He gets a jump shot. Every single team in the NBA wants wing players like RJ Barrett. Okay, like, those guys will help you win championships, because that's, like, the type. I mean, you just look at the NBA history, basically since Jordan, if you need two-way wings. Okay, like, every team that wins championships has a number of those guys, probably, and a lot of them are in prominent roles. So, like, when you see games where he's going head-to-head against Jimmy Butler, and he's not just, like, I mean, even that play, I think Butler got fouled on a three-point shot at the end, and that was not a foul. That was, like, a bullshit call, I thought. And, you know, RJ was, I think that was on RJ, if I remember correctly, and, like, it was not a foul. And but, like, that's not even really the point. The point is that he was up against Butler throughout the end of that game, and at no point did you really feel like he was overmatched or Butler was outsmarting him, or, you know, he was in that game the entire way, and he was competitive at a very high level against a premier player in the league. So when you see something like that, that stands out to me as, like, a really big deal.
Okay, and that is all for today. We are going to take a little break, because this one went really long. Schwinn is always so detailed and sometimes gets angry and goes off on his tangents, and it's very entertaining, but also goes long. So we're going to take a break and come back tomorrow to finish up this discussion with our top two moments, which you can read as top two games of the 2019-20 season. Three really big ones. Not to spoil it too much, but do the math. Our top two moments feature three games. So we'll be back tomorrow to finish off this discussion.